Bitch, the Phil Hendry Show.
Well, the idea may seem very unusual, but the thought behind it
if
is...
If you have looked at any of the other summits that took place, I mean, in London...
I talked with Mr. Polonsky. He's in very good shape.
He was... What you saw this weekend, you had Secretary Gates and Senator McCain...
A little bit loose.
Hang in there, honey.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. On this show, truth is our bitch. On this radio show, the only thing that's important is what's really happening, not necessarily what you want to believe, because the guy making enough money, he's got to be telling the truth, right? On this show, we remind you that the guys talking to you on the television and talking to you from the radio are 100 times more likely to be lying to you than a politician. And the funniest aspect of all of this is that this is lost on the overwhelming majority of Americans. You want to know why the Tea Party took off and is winning? It's because those dumbasses would rather trust and believe a cat who is paid to is basically paid for by advertisers. Some dude that don't have to tell the truth. Anyway, welcome to the show, 877-876-PHIL. And we will get back into that discussion I had with that gentleman. I want to thank the gentleman that called last hour. He was giving us the... These different models, you know, there's a beverage model. No, it ain't about, you know, you're pointing to the Coke. That's funny.
What are you pointing to the Coke for? That's a beverage bottle.
That ain't beverage like a drink. It's the guy's name.
I know.
And the Bismarck model, all that. We'll get into that because it's an important, it's kind of an interesting, I think it's interesting to know, what the hell is a healthcare plan? Do you understand that now that this has been defeated, and it has been defeated for this year, doesn't mean it's defeated for all 4 years. Doesn't mean that it's dead in the water, but it's dead this year. You can kiss it goodbye. It ain't going to happen. And now will come the actual groundwork, you know, the actual legwork of finding out what the hell a healthcare plan is. Not that I necessarily need to know, but there are a lot of, or you do, or there are a lot of people who don't know. I don't know what the hell he means. That's why you think it's bad, huh? Yeah. All right, I understand. Top of the hour, though, this might have been on any other night. Maybe it would have been big news. Maybe in a different era. Maybe in a different year. Maybe were this 10 years ago, 20 years ago, this might have made the top of our news on our show. But on our show, this ranks second, okay? There's other stuff going on. However, it's important. It's a celebrity who was arrested and convicted of assaulting or otherwise having sex with or molesting a minor. The actual conviction, the actual law that was broken, we'll tell you what it was. I'm sure it's somewhere. I can't tell you because I don't know what the laws were technically in the state of California in 1978. But it's, you know, unlawful intercourse, unlawful sexual relations with a minor child, to wit, a 13-year-old. And the sexual relations engaged in with this 13-year-old was by a man in his 40s at the time, Roman Polanski, the famed film director. Now, this happened back in the year 1977. Polanski was making movies here in the United States. He was living here in California. It was only a few short years before that his wife, along with others, friends of his, were murdered. Grisly, horrible series of murders there at his home in Los Angeles. And, of course, that begat the Manson case, and we got to know those people. And Susan Atkins just kicked off. Good riddance to bad rubbish, as far as I'm concerned. She just croaked on Friday. See you later, honey. And I don't give a damn if she had brain cancer, if she had eyeball cancer. Yeah, I'll bet she had brain cancer, man. She probably had a freaking brain tumor going all the way back to when they did that job. Anyway, Polanski was arrested in Switzerland over the weekend. And he will be extradited, at least that's the request. I shouldn't say he will. He's going to fight extradition to the United States following his arrest in Switzerland at the request of California prosecutors. They want him brought back to the United States for leaving the country in 1978 before he was sentenced for having sex with a 13-year-old girl. Interesting how they say he had sex with a 13-year-old girl if it was another guy for sexually assaulting a 13-year-old girl. If it was a guy that was unknown, it would have been for sexual you know, for rape of a 13-year-old girl. But for, you know, I'm telling you, don't tell me that these things don't change depending upon the person. However, I'm going to be watching this one real careful. Roman Polanski was convicted of a crime. Michael Jackson was not convicted of a crime. Michael Jackson was, in point of fact, harassed. And he was run through a public relations ringer by these cops up here in Santa Barbara and by others, by certain individuals, certain adults who were looking to milk him for all they could. And this man was never convicted of any crime. But he was vilified, and he was lambasted, and he was indicted with every kind of perversion following his death by so many people in this country who just didn't get it or didn't understand it, didn't want to understand. Maybe they just didn't like the guy, didn't like his pasty skin, didn't like his music, didn't like his, he may be black, but he's white kind of a look. I don't know. Now you got a guy here who was actually convicted of the crime. His name's Roman Polanski. I understand he's European. I understand that perhaps the rules, the laws, the customs are different where he came from. I also know the man's been through a lot. I know his background. He was the survivor himself of the Nazi occupation of his homeland when he was a very small child. His family lost to the barbarism of the Nazis, escapes to the West, becomes a feted film director in London, eventually comes to Hollywood, makes a motion picture that is a smash hit called Chinatown. Makes Rosemary's Baby, is the talk of the town and the toast of the town, marries a beautiful young actress who is later horribly murdered. And, of course, nothing but sympathy is felt for this man as he attempts to come to terms and deal with that horrifying reality. He goes on to make perhaps what some consider to be one of the greatest films ever made. Certainly it's talked about as one of the greatest screenplays ever written, Chinatown. He's made some damn good movies. Damn good movies. My favorite's Bitter Moon, the one he made recently with Adrian Brody, the pianist. Chinatown, great film. Tess, great film. He's made some great movies, there's no question. But the guy broke the law in the state of California, had sex with a 13-year-old girl, and this was not necessarily consensual. How do you call it consensual when this child has been given champagne and, I believe, a Quaalude, if I'm not mistaken? Prior to sentencing in 1978, he took off. Now, it's interesting to note in this case that the judge was a guy by the name of Lawrence Rittenband. There was a prosecutor here at L.A. County at the time, and he's still alive, and I've seen him interviewed. His name's Roger Gunson. Lawrence Rittenband was, by all accounts, including the prosecutor himself, Roger Gunson, kind of a different sort of individual. And not only that, you know, this guy, Rittenband, he was a little bit of a celebrity gadfly. He liked to know the stars. He liked to have these celebrity cases in his courtroom. And he also liked to choreograph certain things when it came to his trials. Gunson, in fact, recounted a story along with Polanski's attorney where Rittenband wanted these two guys to say in open court that they agreed to something that he was directing them to agree to. And if they did what he was directing them to do, then things would turn out in the manner in which they wanted. It was very bizarre. And after the second go-around with this stuff, Gunson said, and Polanski's attorney, whose name we'll get here in a second, both said, no, we ain't doing that. No more choreographing, nothing. The point of the story is this. Polanski was hoping for some kind of a probationary sentence. He was hoping for a sentence that would allow him to stay out of jail. He made a big mistake. He traveled to Europe, which was not against the rules that the court had laid down for him prior to his sentencing. He had work to do in Europe. He was scouting locations for a film. He went to Europe. He says, I'm going to be working. And he was photographed at a beer hall in Germany, and he was smiling at the camera. That's all the judge in Los Angeles needed. When he saw this guy sitting there at a table in a beer hall in Germany, and I have to be honest with you, if you go out and you work and you're, you know, you're on location or you're at home or whatever, you're going to sit down and have a beer is not necessarily a crime. But the look of Roman Polanski, who is asking the court to be lenient, who is asking him to have asking the court to give him a probationary kind of a sentence, that he was going to go to Europe and he needed to work. And the judge said, okay, go to Europe, do your thing, come on back, we'll do sentencing. And this cat is sitting there having a beer, and the photograph is gleefully taken by the district attorney's office and waved in the face of the judge and saying something to the effect of, this guy's making you look like an ass. Douglas Dalton was the attorney for Roman Polanski. He was a damn good lawyer, too. Dalton and Gunson both verified this story about this jackass Rittenband and how he liked to choreograph things and how he wanted things to look, and he wanted both of these guys to say this stuff. And they both looked at each other and said, I ain't going there and saying that. Rittenband was pissed because he was a prideful, egotistical man, so that when Polanski got back to Los Angeles, Rittenband was going to throw the book at him. And prior to sentencing, Polanski was taken out to Chino and basically put behind bars with the inmates out in Chino. And I'm not saying he didn't deserve that. I'm not saying that at all. The judge, you know, said, you know what, no more fun and games, no more. You're not going out to work, none of that jazz. You're coming back. You're going to be put in jail until sentencing. So Polanski's out in Chino. He's behind bars. He realizes now that the public relations tide has turned against him. He is let out of Chino and is let out of jail for a period of time before his sentencing takes place. I think he'd actually completed an evaluation at Chino. It was a psychiatric evaluation. So now he's out. He is to be sentenced the following day. He walks out of, I believe it was his attorney's office or some office, goes to LAX, gets on a plane, and flies to Europe, and that's the last anybody sees of him. Now, in his defense, I'll just say this. It wasn't that Roman Polanski wasn't willing to accept punishment. It was his belief that this judge, Rittenband, because Rittenband was a petty man, in his opinion, and because Rittenband was a guy that didn't want to be made to look stupid by celebrities, in his opinion, and as Polanski himself said, he was being toyed with by this judge as a, quote, cat would toy with a mouse. He decided that he would take off, not because he didn't want to be punished, but because he did not think that he deserved what he felt the judge was about to lay on him, which was some serious heavy jail time. Nonetheless, running was the worst thing he could have done. Roman Polanski, for whatever it was it would have cost him and whatever it was he would have suffered, would have been out of jail by now and would be living in the United States, and he wouldn't have to be looking over his shoulder. Here is Roman Polanski's attorney today, a man by the name of Hervé Timine. That's pronounced Hervé Tameme. Okay, thanks. Talks to Good Morning America on ABC to discuss how his client reacted to this arrest in Europe over the weekend.
I've talked with Mr. Polanski. He's in very good shape. He was shocked by his arrestation, but you know, he wants to struggle, and I think that it will be possible for us to obtain his freedom.
Now, here is Deborah Winger, who's the president of the Zurich Film Festival jury, which he was going to be attending, and where he was arrested, reading a statement to the press in support of Polanski.
The jury of the International Zurich Film Festival has decided to proceed in honoring films and filmmaking, despite the Philistine nature of the collusion that has now occurred. We came to honor Roman Polanski as a great artist, but under these sudden and arcane circumstances, we can only think of him today as a human being, uncertain of the year ahead. His life has always informed his art, and it always will. This fledgling festival has been unfairly exploited, and whenever this happens, the entire art world suffers. We hope today this latest order will be dropped. It is based on a 3-decade-old case that is all but dead except for a minor technicality. We stand by and await his release and his next masterwork.
Pretty shocking statement coming from a woman that it's all but dead, the sexual assault, if you will, of a 13-year-old girl. I love Roman Polanski's work, too, but the law's the law. Now, we will be looking at this to see whether this guy is a man who gets justice or whether he's a celebrity that's going to get run through the mill because, after all, celebrities got it so good, they don't deserve justice. We'll find out. 877-876-PHIL, and we'll be back in a world-famous Phil Hendry show with more on health care. What is it? What is it in different countries? And your phone calls, 877-876-PHIL. You know, it's funny how the facts can get in the way of telling a good story. You know, the facts can get in the way of having a really good opinion. And I'm not being facetious. I mean it. I just laid out the whole factual, in part, basis of the Roman Polanski story there when it comes to this girl, this 13-year-old girl. It doesn't mean that I think the guy shouldn't have been and should not be sentenced and punished. I'm just trying to give the background here a little bit, you know. And maybe I shouldn't give the background. The fact is, it's true. If the guy was told by the judge to do this and do that and do something, then just freaking do it, man. You know, you're the cat that broke the law. That's life. You got to suck it up and you got to live with it. Here is Peter in Boston. Peter, what's on your mind tonight? Welcome.
Hello, Phil.
Yes, sir.
Hi. You're not coming in that great.
Okay, I'm sorry. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah. You're talking about
okay.
Facts, yet you're spewing information that you don't back up any factual statement regarding health care. And I work in health care. I'm an emergency doctor. I got off shift a little while ago. I'm driving on my way home right now. And
well, what did I not say?
Something. The last thing you want is government taking over health care.
Okay, that's not fact. That's your opinion. You said I was spewing fact. You said I was spewing horse dung, and you've just given me opinion. Give me some facts.
All right. The fact is government insurance is a joke, okay? People come
okay, that's an opinion.
To my emergency department because it's a fact.
People no, that's an opinion.
People come to the emergency room because they cannot get a physician to see them because the reimbursement rates on Medicaid and Medicare programs is so subpar that doctors
yeah.
won't take these
And we know that's broken. We know that Medicare okay. and Medicaid are broken. We know those
yeah,
are not the most
exactly.
the best systems in the world. So what's your point?
Programs. My point is their government programs. If government
hey, I'm going to ask you something, Peter. If I find a doctor who is guilty of malpractice, is he a doctor or is he just one doctor and he should be, not be held up as an example of all doctors? It's a bad system.
You know,
everyone
Phil,
knows
I had
that.
I settle a malpractice lawsuit even though I did nothing wrong because
sure.
heart is one of the big problems in this country.
Right.
And that is one thing you're not going to see with this Democratic legislature and president. Because they're in the back pocket to the trial attorneys.
You haven't brought up one fact. You have not brought. You talked to me about facts, and you haven't brought up one fact. Not one fact have you brought up.
$250 billion a year are wasted on defensive medicine because physicians are afraid of being sued, and there's no tort reform.
Why are they afraid of being sued? I don't understand. Why are they afraid of being sued? Is it because they make mistakes?
No, it's because the tort laws in this country are so that...
Let me explain something to you, my young friend. You may be an emergency room doctor, but I'm going to tell you something. If a doctor orders a test because he doesn't want to be sued for malpractice, what does that tell you?
What does that tell you? Is that we're afraid of the most obscure diagnosis that a patient can possibly have being there, and even though... all the facts and the presentation are consistent with a common illness. If there's one little thing that's a little askew, or the patient's like, no, there's something more going on. I want the MRI. I want to make sure that it isn't this rare disease. The doctor's so afraid that it could be this thing that they over-test up the wazoo. And there was a study, I forgot who it was, But there was a study that was released yesterday that demonstrates, it was a nonpartisan commission, and it shows that there is,
you know, you still haven't, I'm listening to all of your money talk, but you still haven't told me how it is doctors are being unfairly treated. If there's no malpractice, there's no malpractice.
I'll give you
if a
one
doctor
example,
has not
something called the loss of chance theory. The loss of chance theory in malpractice goes like this. If the
all right, I got
shows,
five, I got 10 seconds.
Okay, if the evidence shows that a different course could have been taken, and this different course may have led to a different outcome, then you need to find for the plaintiff, even if what the physician did was reasonable. Okay?
All right, we'll be right back. Thank you for your opinion, sir. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Back to more of your phone calls here, just a second at 877-876-PHIL. Let's get to the bottom of this tort reform horse dung, which has been used as another in the arsenal of horse turds that the anti-healthcare reform people have at their disposal. And really it is like picking up a clod of horse crap and pitching it, seeing which one stinks the worst. Just keep on flinging these, man. Maybe one of these things will stick, right? If it ain't euthanasia, then it's single payer. If it ain't single payer, then it's something else. Then it's tort reform. Let's talk about medical malpractice. Now, we heard the young doctor just call me. He said $250 billion. The nation's annual health care tab is $2.5 trillion. $2.5 trillion. You want to talk about a debt, a national debt that's $12 trillion, and an annual tab for health care at $2.5 trillion. What's that times 10? Because we're talking about a 10-year plan to eventually pay for national health care and effectively deal with the national debt to the tune of somewhere in the neighborhood, I think Obama said 50%, more like 60 or even 65, 70%. What's 2.5 trillion times 10? It's a whole lot of zeros, man. That's what it is. A whole lot of zeros, as the man said, right? $250 billion. Now, I'm going to give you an example. $250 billion, according to that young doctor. I'm sure he's a great doctor. But we're talking about something, doctor, that is a little bit beyond the emergency room here. This is beyond your emergency room. This is all the emergency rooms in America. This is all the hospitals in America. This is all the doctor's offices in America. This is young. This is old. This is insured. This is those who are not insured. We got Northwestern University. You've heard of Northwestern, the Kellogg School of Management. They use a database of employer-sponsored healthcare plans that covered 10 million Americans, and they looked at the impact of tort reform measures already enacted in more than 30 states. The authors of this particular study concluded that comprehensive nationwide reforms would lower overall health care costs by 2 to 3% at the most. Its significance, says Kellogg Professor Lee Moore Daphne, a co-author of the study, but it's small. As President Obama told a joint session of Congress on September the 9th, I don't believe malpractice reform is a silver bullet. He's right. Now, let me tell you something. The president said himself, and he said it after the speech, he's happy to look at tort reform. He's happy to even speed up tort reform tests if this is something that'll make people happy. But when the doctors say that's the cure-all, you guys are, I don't know whether you left one of your nitrous oxide tanks on or not. Because it ain't. $2.5 trillion a year. Now, the Congressional Budget Office. We've all heard of the Congressional Budget Office, haven't we? Why, we've heard that it is a nonpartisan. And it is a nonpartisan entity that both parties have used over the many, 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 many years that the CBO has been in existence. A study there at the Congressional Budget Office in 2004 came up with much, much lower figures on this tort reform. The CBO estimated that malpractice premiums and awards to patients represented less than 2% of overall health care spending. Just as I suspected. You know something? I got to tell you something. I looked this stuff up because I want to make sure I got my facts and my figures and the names and the places. But before I even look any of this stuff up, my instinct when I heard about tort reform was the following. It's chicken crap. It doesn't amount to all that much. People throw these terms out there because it sounds really cool and it's going to stick in someone's mind and they're going to go, tort reform. Just like that, buy your insurance in another state. Some of these things will lower costs, folks. We're talking about the need for a comprehensive reform. $2.5 trillion a year. What are we talking? I mean, this is some real money. When you're talking about a national debt that's $12 trillion, you lower that or wipe it out completely. Jack, you're saving a lot of money. Excuse me for mentioning it. That's almost $30 trillion over 10 years. So the so-called defensive medicine may be motivated less by liability concerns than by the income it generates for physicians. Now, I don't want to call anybody a liar, and I don't want to call anybody a deceptive, shall we say, to use a lighter term, but could it possibly be that more tests are ordered because these guys want to make more money? Or am I saying something that's offensive? How dare you say I want to make money? According to the Kellogg director, Mr. Daphne, and he's looking at the numbers, he says that make more sense. We have some expectations about medical care that make it difficult to roll back the services that have already been delivered. Most doctors are paid by the number of services they provide. Since insured patients rarely pay the cost of additional treatments or tests, there is little pressure on doctors to scale back even when the fear of being sued is removed. In other words, you can take away, or shall we call it, you can tort reform your ass off. It don't necessarily mean a doctor's going to say, well, guess what? You don't have to have that many tests. People, I don't care what we do. I just wish that whatever decision it was that we came to was arrived at honestly. The Tea Party Express is not an honest organization of people. Maybe there are honest people in it, but it's being led by dishonest people. Dishonest, politically motivated people. Just as the anti-Iraq war movement of the last decade that was opposing Bush was led by dishonest people. I hated them just as much as I hate these bastards. Why? Because it hurts my country. It hurts my country. It hurts what we're trying to get done for the country, right? Or maybe wrong, but that's how I feel. All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number here. Don't forget we're online, our live streaming video every night at philhenryshow.com. By the way, the CBO in 2006 reported that tort reform can actually increase health care spending, and we'll get into that in just a moment. Where are we going? Let's go over to Bill in Nashville. You're on the Phil Henry Show, Bill.
Yeah, I have a quick question about the guy that was accused of the rape. They got him over in Switzerland coming back.
Yeah,
doesn't the statute
right.
of limitations run out on him on 7 years? I know it
no.
doesn't run out on murder, but on everything else, doesn't it run out after seven?
No, not on that. Not on that crime. No.
Okay, that was my only question. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
I hope you're okay. Here is David in Boston. David, let me see. Where's David? Here is David in Boston. David, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Thanks for calling. What's up?
How's it going? I just want to first, I have a question, but I want to say thank you for explaining that greatly as far as that last young doctor that called, because I couldn't have said it better, and that was a great point that you made. I have one question. For the last, I guess, say, 100 years or what have you, we've been saying healthcare costs too much. We got to do something to fix it. Every time somebody, there's a strong sense that somebody's stepping up to do something, it gets killed. Then what's going to happen next year? We're going to keep complaining, saying that we need to do something about this health care. All I'm saying is this. Somebody do something. It might not be the right thing. It might have a lot of follies in it, but it's something. It's a roadmap. It's something that started. because at the end of the day, there are people without health care still dying. There are emergency rooms still overcrowded. There are still small business owners like myself who cannot afford to give their employees.
Right, that's the point. That's the point. See, that's the pitch. Because you and I both, David, while we may care about people that don't have health insurance, the way you sell this is by, you got to keep hammering, this is costing you guys. This is costing all of us. This is costing us a lot of money. This is consumer protection we're talking about. You got to pay more. I got to pay more. See?
Exactly.
And if you get health care, I will tell you this. Obama's not done with it. He's going to bring it back next year. And if you want to look at the bright side of this, this has been a learning curve. This has exposed the American people to the discussion over the long term. We've never had such an intense national debate about this ever in the history of this country. And it's going to continue next year, and we're going to get smarter. And I think a lot of people that were opposed to it this year are going to be in favor of it next year. They're going to see Obama as a president in his second year. They're going to not be so suspicious of some of the things that he proposes. I think that I'm glad he brought this out in his first year as president, because it gives him time to actually talk to the American people about it. David, thanks so much. 877-876-PHIL. That's the bottom line on that for me. That's where that's at. Just hammer away, you know, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah, well, you know.
You know what I mean by hammering. Well, I'm talking about hammering the issue. Hammer away and keep on hammering until something gets hammered, I guess. All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number. In other words, what I'm saying is he'll bring it up again next year. The Congress will deal with it. There's going to be a whole lot of guys that were against it this year are going to be in favor of it next year. We're going to learn more about it, which reminds me, I forgot to tell you, I went out of my way to find this for you. You remember the guy that called and was talking about the different healthcare models, okay? You know, I don't care if this is boring to a lot of people. I love this stuff, man. It's just, for me, this is about the future. It's about our country continuing. It's about our country continuing to be what it always has been, the best idea the human race ever had. And it doesn't mean that we go along with everything the Europeans do, and it doesn't mean we go along with everything the Canadians do. It means what we do in America is we take a look around, we say, well, that's a good idea, that's a good idea. We synthesize these things, we make them American. And generally, they kick the crap out of anything else, right? Who would argue that football isn't better than rugby or soccer? Thank you. All right. What are you looking at me for?
What's that got to do with it?
I'm just saying, man, the way we do stuff.
Yeah, well, how we synthesize it, you know.
Oh. All right. The guy that called last hour, he's talking about the different healthcare models. The Beveridge model was named after William Beveridge. He was a daring social reformer who designed Britain's National Health Service. In this system, healthcare is provided and financed by the government through tax payments, just like the police force or the public library. Meaning, do you have to pay for a cop to come to your house? No. Does the cop have a gun? He has a rifle? He's got it all going on, right? Yeah, I mean, you're paying taxes for that. But there's no individual service payment you make to a cop. There's no individual service payment you make to a library. So in Britain, the cops are the doctors and the library are the hospitals. You go in and you use, and the employees are all paid for, and there's no biggie. That's the Beveridge system. That's the British system. And some people don't like it. Other people think it's fine. What have you. The National Health Insurance Model. This is the system obviously used by our friends to the north. Canada's system, for example, has negotiated such low prices from the single payer tends to have considerable market power to negotiate for lower prices. That's what the national model is. It uses private sector providers, but payments come from a government-run insurance program that every citizen pays into. Since there's no need for marketing, no financial motive to deny claims, and no profit, those universal insurance programs tend to be cheaper and much simpler administratively than American-style for-profit insurance. The single payer tends to have considerable market power to negotiate for lower prices. In Canada, for example, they've negotiated such low prices from pharmaceutical companies that Americans have spurned their own drugstores to buy pills north of the border. You always hear about Canadians coming down here, but you didn't hear about that. Americans going north to buy drugs. I mean, we go south to buy drugs, but we go north to buy drugs. Anyway, national health insurance plans also control costs by limiting medical services and so forth. You've heard of the out-of-pocket model, which is what the gentleman referred to. That's our model. Good luck. And then you have the Bismarck model, named for Prussian Chancellor Otto von Bismarck, who invented the welfare state as part of the unification of Germany in the 19th century. Germany used to be a whole bunch of little states, and they unified it into Germany. Despite its European heritage, the system of providing health care would look fairly familiar to Americans. It uses an insurance system, usually financed jointly by employers and employees through payroll deduction. Unlike the U.S. insurance industry, though, Bismarck-type health insurance plans have to cover everybody, and they don't make a profit. Doctors and hospitals tend to be private in Bismarck countries. Japan has more private hospitals than the U.S. Although this is a multi-payer model, Germany has about 240 different funds. Tight regulation gives government much of the cost control clout that the single-payer beverage model provides. The Bismarck model is found in Germany, of course, France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Japan, Switzerland, and to a degree in Latin America. If you look at these models, folks, these are all being used around the world, and these are all models that we can synthesize or we can adopt and adapt to our own needs. There's a lot of, as the man said, a lot of ways to skin a cat back when they were skinning cats, which fortunately they don't do that anymore.
What are they?
The different models?
No, the ways you skin a cat. I'm writing down it.
Shut up. 877-876-PHIL. Coming up here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, a Facebook poll asks if Obama should be killed. So here we have a president, for right or for wrong, wrestling with an enormous problem that costs us $2.5 trillion a year, and some stupid douchebag on Facebook is asking whether he should be assassinated or not. So at the one end, you've got patriotic people like our president and John McCain and others wrestling, and at the other end, you've got some, you know, some ass bucket over there on Facebook with his little application. We'll be back to talk about that and more on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
It's the Phil Henry Show. Famous Phil Henry Show.
Every day on the Phil Henry Show, you go to our website, philhenryshow.com, and get downloadable copies of our show. You can hear the audio online, live streaming. You can watch the show streaming online, our live video. And you can also download not only the show, but you can download all kinds of clips. As a matter of fact, tomorrow begins adding in new archive material on our website from many, many years of the Phil Henry Show. So it's www.philhenryshow.com. Dean Allen, candidate, uses AK-47 to raise cash. I think this is great. And naturally, there are people who, because you say AK-47 and gun, and, well, guns are bad. And I never understood the reaction that way. I don't know why that's a liberal conservative issue. It's a Second Amendment issue. Anyway, this candidate for South Carolina's adjutant general. What's an adjutant general? Well, he's a general. Anyway, he found a high-powered way to appeal to supporters over the weekend. Dean Allen held a drawing for an AK-47 at a fundraiser in Greenville on Saturday. The event called for a machine gun social. It was held at Allen Arms Indoor Range on Poinsett Highway. For $25, donors were given a barbecue lunch and 20 shots with a machine gun. A free drawing determined the winner of the semi-automatic and AK-47 valued at $700. Now, the only thing wrong with this is there was an incident not too long ago, and I know you know which one I'm talking about, where someone was having some kind of a machine gun demonstration, and a little kid was allowed to have the gun and shot somebody. So you need to have, I understand this, the point that I'm trying to make. I support a person's right to own a gun, including a damn machine gun, with an automatic weapon. I'm just asking people who agree with me, Second Amendment people, whatever you want to call yourself, remember that this is an ongoing public relations campaign. I recognize that it's a Second Amendment, and you shouldn't have to sell what you've already sold. You shouldn't have to, in other words, present something as acceptable, which has already been accepted. That is, the right to own and bear arms. Unfortunately, the anti-gun lobby in this country has had decades and decades of free time telling people that the real cause of crime in America have been guns. And we know that this is not the case. This was part of the hysteria of the early 80s. I remember I was there. And every anti-violence film that you saw, it concluded with the same thing, guns. Guns. Guns stop guns. Gun violence stops gun violence. So while you're having these nice things, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with them, understand there's people out there just waiting for somebody to get shot and killed so they can make their point. Anyway, here is candidate Dean Allen explaining why he held a machine gun control.
Well, the idea may seem very unusual, but the thought behind it is very usual and important. We want to show solidarity with the Second Amendment to the Constitution. The most important right the people have is the right to keep and bear arms. But we're out here running civilians through a fundraiser, having fun on a Saturday afternoon. We give them a 10-minute safety briefing, put a live ammo in their hands. Nobody gets hurt. People were coming up with some pretty good targets and having me autograph their targets for them. So it's not a safety issue, and all of our rights, including the First Amendment, to be here and talk today are predicated on supporting the Second Amendment.
And, of course, you would have to have a Southern accent. That's, you know, we're going to have to clean some of this stuff. Anyway, good for you, man. We'll be back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show with that Facebook poll on Obama. Should he be killed or not? Wait till you hear this one. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Phil Hendry.